We greet each one of you this morning in our Lord's name. Our thoughts this morning are centered around little foxes and tender grapes. Before we look at that as a text, I would like to take some time and give some background to this book, The Song of Solomon, and try to put it in context. And I think if we can have a context to put this instruction into, it would be much more helpful for us. The Song of Solomon is introduced in verse 1 as a Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. Solomon, we're told in Kings, wrote 1,005 songs. And I believe that what he's mentioning here is this is the one above all others. We don't have record of his other songs. This one is recorded. It's a love story between Solomon and the Shulamite woman. We get that from chapter 6, verse 13, where he calls her the Shulamite woman. There's also typography in this book that would apply to Christ's relationship to the church. From the New Testament, we have in Ephesians 5 a very clear correlation in typology and an instruction between Christ's relationship to the church and the marriage relationship. The two are designed to parallel one another, and we learn from both relationships in order to get a better understanding of what we are to be taught. In the Old Testament, a parallel passage that could be taken to help understand the Song of Solomon would be Psalm 45. We will not look at that, but if that's a psalm that you might want to look at in comparison, it talks about Messiah the King to be wed to a daughter. In looking at our thoughts this morning, we'd like to borrow from some of both of those pictures, because I think it's important to have both of those pictures in mind as we look at the Song of Solomon. On the one hand, we need the typology in our minds so that this simply is not a sensual love story. With the typology in mind, we understand that there's deep spiritual truths here. But it's not only typology that's in view. When we look at it from a marriage perspective, we see that there's very practical advice here. As we look at the background of Solomon, a king, look at the culture of those times where kings typically married royal blood, other royal blood, other people of equal status and station. Here we have Solomon reaching out to a young girl who's a shepherd girl and a vine dresser. We see that in chapter 1, verses 6 through 8. And so of all the options that Solomon could have had for women, he looks at this young shepherd girl and says, she's the fairest of 10,000. There's tremendous meaning in that as it relates to Christ and the church, his worth versus our worth. There's also a beautiful picture in that in relation to the marriage. Because what binds these two together is simple love. Crosses all cultural boundaries, transcends differences in births and backgrounds. I believe that in trying to understand this book, the two that are in focus here, Solomon and the Shulamite woman, I believe that they are already married when this book is being recorded. And I give reasons for that, because sometimes Some commentators tend to look at it purely as a bride and a bridegroom. And I'll tell you why. I believe that they are already married. There's graphic illustrations in this book that are not appropriate for a premarital relationship. It would have been a violation of both Jewish and Christian morality to talk and to refer to one another in the language that's used in this book. There's descriptions in this book that are purely within the context of marital intimacy. The husband refers to the wife as a sister and a spouse. By sister, he means that she's already made a part of his family. And by spouse, they're enjoying the marriage relationship. Jewish men were not able to read this book until they were 30. And so I believe that it would have been certainly inappropriate to consider this betrothal language. This is marriage language. I believe that what is taking place in this book is a husband and a wife recounting their whole relationship, beginning with the betrothal, through the consummation, up until the final fulfillment as they look forward into the future. Again, I believe it's typology. I mentioned Psalm 45, the language there that's spoken of in relation to the king and the bride. And I believe that Scripture is its own interpreter. And in parallel passages, we are able to find the meaning of this book. Israel's described throughout the Old Testament as being married to God. In the Jewish prophets, there's that same allegorical understanding describing Jehovah and Israel in marriage relationship. In the New Testament, it's Christ and the church. And the Jews also had that understanding that this book was allegorical in the sense that it described Jehovah's relationship with Israel. And so we have a long testimony of ancient history to see the typology in this book. Another reason I believe that typology has to be understood is because the spouses are described with perfection. If you look at it only within the marriage context, you would say, this is not my spouse. They are not completely perfect as described in this book. And so we might ask the question, why is the spouse described with perfection? I believe the spouse is described with perfection because it's a perfect model. There is no flaws in this model. When we set models for our lives, we need to set perfect models, because if we follow that model should never lead us astray. I also believe it relates to typology because only in typology, in the ultimate fulfillment of Christ and His bride and God and His bride, is that perfection realized. With that as a background, I would like to look at the woman speaking. We see that in verses 3, 4, 6, 8, and 9, it's very clearly the woman speaking, referring to the partner as his. And so when we get down to verse 10, again, it's still the wife speaking. And notice verse 10, how it opens. My beloved spake and said unto me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. So notice a key component here in verse 10. My beloved spake. Who is speaking? The woman is speaking. What is now the woman saying? The woman is saying that my beloved, or my other one, the male, has said this to me. So in reality, she is recounting. She is rehearsing. She is repeating what he has first spoken to her. In typology, that means that it is the bride or the church speaking to Christ, but the church is recounting what Christ has already said to the bride, the church. Therefore, if it would make it easier to understand, if you took verses 10 through 16, you could put them in red letters. Why is that important? Because it's Christ speaking to us, the church, today. Speaking within the context of church relationships, relationship with Him as Christ, and also speaking, Christ Himself speaking to the marriage relationship. The fact that this is being recounted by the woman means that there has been a period of time where this has elapsed from when he has spoken these words to her, and she is now repeating them back to him. To me, this is an indication of a period of time as where she heard the message, and now she is embracing the message and rehearsing it back. Their hearts are now one. Verse 16 makes that clear. My beloved is mine, and I am his. There's a picture of the unity. We now are one in purpose. Now let's notice the setting. Verses 11 through 13. Verse 11, for lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The setting is this: it's springtime. The cold and the barrenness of winter is over. The earth is coming alive with beauty. The thought is this, that there has been a period of coldness in the relationship. There has been a period of time where there has been no growth. Not only no growth, but there has been a withering and a dying in the relationship. The man responds by calling out in love to his wife, saying, it's springtime. She did not respond through the cold winter months, but now she is remembering these words and is coming. Not only has there been winter, but there has also been separation. Notice those words. Beginning in verse 10, come away. He is speaking in the language of come to me. Verse 14, where is she, O my dove, that art in the clefts of the rock? She has hidden herself. In the secret places of the stairs, she has withdrawn herself. Let me see thy countenance. Let me hear thy voice. For sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely. He is asking her to come out. Come out of separation. Come out of hiding. Let me see you. Let me hear you. What has been involved in this period of separation? We don't know. We are not told everything. We are told in verse 6 in chapter 1 that perhaps part of it was she was very busy with other cares. Look at that in verse 6, the second part. My mother's children were angry with me. There's family difficulties. They made me the keeper of the vineyards. There's a lot of other responsibilities, vineyards plural. But mine own vineyard have I not kept. She's saying that my responsibilities, my family difficulties were that great that my marriage suffered because I did not keep my own vineyard. She has neglected the relationship because of the pressures of life. We notice how he calls her with the most tender language. He might have made demands. You are my wife. Take it within that cultural setting where the man's word was law to the wife. It would have been perfectly appropriate in that cultural setting to have made demands. But he chooses not to make demands. It's very clear with the language that he uses to her that he is seeking to win her love back with a tender appeal and very expressive in romantic language. And again, she is now repeating the words of her husband back. The repetition of those words is the indication that she is coming. She's responding. And she recognizes that it's springtime. Now look at the main message. We saw the setting. Verses 10 through 14 gives the setting, gives the background. Look at the message. Verse 15. Take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. I want to note, first of all, that she uses the word us. Take us the foxes, for our vines, our, have tender grapes. She's saying, in the heart of this message, we have a joint responsibility. We are going to work on this together. There has been a period of coldness. There has been a period of separation. The husband held out his love to her, and the husband waited to win her heart until she came. And when she comes, she repeats back the word in affirmation of the message. And she acknowledges that we will work on this together. In the response of coming together, there's no blame. In the response of coming together, the most important thing is, what do we need to do to restore the relationship? We see through this whole book, dialogue, communication. You cannot read this book without recognizing that communication is essential to relationship. We see in this communication a lot of affirmation. In relationship, affirmation is key to connectedness. You cannot read the book without seeing the affirmation again and again between the two. But there's a brokenness here in the relationship. And the work that's laid out for the two can be defined, I believe, in two categories. Little foxes, tender grapes. We might ask, what are the tender grapes? Well, we could say the grapes certainly are the fruit of that relationship. Everything that relationship is designed to yield, that God has designed it to yield. What are the tender grapes? Tender grapes are the first growths, the blossoms, and the young fruit that needs to grow and to mature. And so looking at it in relation to the tender grapes, we could say, number one, that it represents the first fruit of new growth. It could mean early in the marriage, a marriage that is just starting and just beginning to blossom, just beginning to bear fruit. But I would like to extend it beyond that, because I believe when you study the book, these are already married. And they're speaking about new or tender grapes within the marriage context. I think in one respect we could say that anything that is budding to take the relationship to a new level of love. That's what we see taking place here. They're coming together looking for a new dimension in their marriage. Those are tender grapes. They require tender nurture and care. Another way of looking at it could be a fresh start. We're coming back together after the cold winter, after the period of separation. Fresh start means that part of what is coming into that fresh start is a lot of discouragement, a lot of past disappointment. But the fruit is just starting to grow. It's very tender. It requires very tender care. But the tender grapes are important. Notice in verse 13, the vines with the tender grape give a good smell. In other words, there is fragrance surrounding fresh starts. The fresh start is compared to the fragrance and the beauty of springtime. That simply means in typology or in a spiritual application that it's beautiful to your love and beautiful to your Lord. In both applications, both to your spouse and both to the Lord, any fresh start is beautiful and fragrant. I believe that we can also look at it as a renewal of a first love. It's a picture of that first spark bursting up into a flame of passion. And every time we have a fresh start, or every time we take a relationship to a new level, there are new shoots of tender grapes. And those grapes have a wonderful fragrance. Every time we reconnect any broken relationship, there comes forth the fragrance of tender grapes. The tender grapes themselves are the springtime perfume of connected relationships. The tender grapes are the springtime perfume of connected relationships. In a spiritual sense, Jesus said, a branch cannot bear fruit of itself. In other words, it cannot bear fruit in separation. There can only be fruitfulness in union and in connectedness and in relationship. No more can ye except ye abide in me. Disconnected branches wither and are gathered and are burnt. Jesus made that very clear in the spiritual application. Only connected relationships bring forth the tender grapes. And the first and vital connection is our relationship with Jesus Christ. He is our one true love who never fails us. Relationships can be broken for many reasons. Some relationships are broken because truth divides. Jesus said he would send a sword to the earth, Matthew 10, 32 to 37. And that sword would even divide families. He's speaking of the sword of truth. That sword of division is about whether we love him more than our family or not. The principle is this, and I only share this to give balance because this is primarily about relationship. But I think I need to give this one qualifier, and that is this. We ought never to compromise truth in order to keep relationship. And that's why we must understand this in the spiritual typology, because in its highest fulfillment, it's about our love to Jesus Christ. And only in our love to Jesus Christ can we live out the love of connecting other relationships. And we dare never go back on our love to Jesus Christ in order to try to reconnect human relationships. It will always fail. On the other hand, all those who are vitally connected to Christ will always be open and seeking to restore relationships with other people. And this, I believe, is the heartbeat of this passage. Now, what are the little foxes? It says, take us, the foxes, the little foxes. That word take means catch. We need to get control of them. Other translations use the word catch. Take or catch, the idea is this. We are responsible for the little foxes. We are responsible for all the little foxes that are in our vineyard. We are going to take responsibility for those little foxes. We are not going to take it just personally. We are going to take it together. Take us, the little foxes. You see, when we take it together, the focus has moved away from blame as to why we are where we are to what can we do together to rebuild this relationship. I'd like to notice, first of all, that these are little foxes. The main focus is on the little foxes. Take the foxes, yes, but the little foxes. That is the small foxes. Why are they important? Because though they're small, they're still foxes. I believe the principle is this: purposely doing little things that we know that irritate others will ultimately cause big problems. Purposely doing little things that we know irritate others will ultimately cause big problems. These little foxes will spoil our vines. They will spoil our vines. These little foxes can be things such as annoying habits. If you don't know what habits you have that might be annoying to your spouse, all you need to do is ask them. They can certainly tell you. It can be as simple as when you leave the restroom, you don't put the lid down. You do that often enough. It can be annoying to someone who thinks the lid should be down and that it's proper for it to be down. I only give that as an example because sometimes we want to pass those things off as trivial, and in one sense they are trivial, but in another sense, if they're that little and that trivial, it's very simple to change if we know that it annoys our spouse. Disrespectful judgments. One little incident can happen, and we can make a broad, sweeping, disrespectful judgment and a characterization of our spouse. And the damage over that little event goes on and can spoil the vine. Hasty conclusions. When our spouse is talking to us, before we allow them to finish, we are drawing conclusions about where we think they are going. And we don't need to hear the rest of what they're going to say. Is what we're saying when we interrupt and draw the conclusion. We're saying that whatever you intended to say is not important to me, and I can already draw the conclusion with the information that you've already shared. It's another way of saying, you may now shut up. I have all I need to know. Quick and sharp responses. All these are little foxes that will spoil the vine. The Shulamite woman has come through the hard winter of cold and separation, and she affirms the word of her husband that they must take the little foxes out of the vineyard. What she is saying is this: the reason we got where we got was because we did not pay attention to the little things. It's often the little things that irritate others. And when we consider them too trivial for us to change, they can ultimately ruin relationships. Little foxes, which cause a little irritation, only require little changes. Use a little wisdom and make those changes, and the little grapes will start to grow. Secondly, we notice that little foxes are still clever and they're cunning by nature. Little foxes are still foxes. Little foxes still have a fox-like nature. And they should be viewed as destructive. The little foxes will spoil the vine or destroy the vine. That's the thought that's there. And so even though it's little, it is destructive. And the Shulamite woman is recognizing the fact that it has been destructive. Why? Because they come in through the little holes in the hedge at night. We don't pay attention to them because they're just little holes in our hedge. But in those little holes come through the little foxes. And those little foxes have the same nature and the same cunning and the same destructive characteristics and tendencies as the mature foxes. And those little habits will ruin the relationship. The word fox itself means a digger or a burrower, something who digs down holes. What's the relationship here to that in the vine? It's the fact that these little foxes come in and they dig around the roots till eventually the vine is destroyed. And often if you have a puppy, you'll find that a puppy has a desire to dig. Dig up the flower beds. In other words, if you have a little puppy, you can be pretty much sure that your wife is going to be very concerned about what the puppy's going to do in relation to the flower beds. This is specifically the thought that's in mind in relation to the little foxes and the vines. They're going to dig around the vine until the vine is destroyed. Very simply put is this: they will dig up dirt until the vine is destroyed. We need to go back to the past sometimes to get to the root of the problem. But once it is dealt with, the digging up dirt around the vine will always eventually destroy the vine. Another little fox, I believe, is this: taking offense over little things. On the one hand, we need to be willing to change the little things that we know give offense. On the other side, in order to balance it out, we need to be conscious that also one of the little foxes is taking offense over every little thing that doesn't suit us. Unplanned interruptions, unforeseen changes. We all know, if we're honest, we can think that we're having a conversation and it's going fine and we're enjoying ourselves, and then something happened, it's trivial, and all of a sudden everything changes. The whole outlook on the day changes. It's a little fox that we've allowed to come into the relationship. And if not dealt with, that attitude of being willing to take offense at little things, not being able to say, my commitment to you is stronger than the little irritations. We must be committed together to take out, to catch those little foxes. The man takes the lead and holds out the beauty of the springtime, calls to his lover to restore the relationship. He calls and then he waits. It's a clear pattern for the behavior that's supposed to be evident in the husband. He calls and he waits. She responds and she comes. The call and the response are a picture of trust coming back into the relationship. He knows that there's been a breakdown in trust. He knows that he cannot demand trust to be restored. Trust, by its very nature, cannot be demanded. Trust cannot be forced. When there is a mistake made or there's a sin committed, we can be forgiven. Because it's God involved, we can be forgiven right now. Godly people are involved, we can be forgiven right now. But trust always implies time and consistency. And that's why the husband, when he calls and he waits. She responds, and her response is simply saying this: we will work on this together. I trust you for this new beginning. That principle is so important in all relationships. You cannot build a relationship on doubt and skepticism. If we're forever doubtful of the motives of our brother or our sister when we will never be able to bridge that gap of relationship. Love thinketh no evil. You cannot rebuild a relationship when you're always calling into question the motives of the person that is trying to reconnect to yourself. So on the one hand, when trust is destroyed, it cannot be automatically restored. On the other hand, in order for the relationship to be restored, both parties must step out in trust that God is able to restore. The result of that is this. Verse 16. My beloved is mine, and I am his. It's the ultimate picture of Christ calling out, come unto me, when we backslidden into sin. Come, let us take out the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our grapes are tender. In the ultimate picture, we see that in every one of our failures, that Christ is reaching out to us, offering us a new beginning. Remembering again that this is a red letter portion of the Bible. And when we think that we've blown it in relationships, Christ is saying to us, every tender shoot, every new blossom, every tender grape has a good smell.